Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by UCAN, smarter energy to feel stronger, by VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shops, by EnduranceCon, coming up June 27th to 28th at the Long Beach Convention Center. To purchase tickets, go to EnduranceCon.com. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation. This last year, we sent out 3,260 grants, totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out Innovator Interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com, all of your favorite podcast apps. As always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, five-time 70.3 champion, Kelsey Withrow, joins us. Kelsey, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's such an honor to chat with you, Kelsey. So take me back. Growing up, what were your sports? Were swimming number one?
I started swimming competitive swimming since I was six. And all through high school and grade school, I swam and ran.
So, and then through, when you went into high school, did you focus on one over the other?
Yeah, I focused on swimming. So I did club swimming and high school swimming all through high school.
And what was your specialty?
The mile. No sprinting for me.
That was always the one where everybody's like, okay, everybody who wants to do the 50, the 100, and everybody else, yeah, you're doing the mile. You're going long.
Yep. Even that seems short now.
Yeah. So was it one of those things where you just, the longer it went, the more you enjoyed it?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I was a sprinter growing up, like early on, and then I kind of phased out of that when I switched club teams, and I just could kind of figure out, I could kind of go the same speed, whether it was like a 500 or a mile.
Yeah.
And yeah, I enjoy the longer stuff a lot more.
And so, did you want to swim in college as well?
I did. So I had committed my junior year, I committed to a Division I school in Michigan, Oakland University. And so I knew I was going to swim there, but I also knew I was only going to swim 1 year before I moved to Colorado Springs.
And so your family was moving to Springs, or you?
No, actually, so I got invited to train with the national team for triathlon in Colorado Springs.
So who was that, a Barb Lindquist thing? Did she identify you?
Actually, that came later. It was Michelle Blessing.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like back in 2001, 2002.
So right after the Olympics started in 2000.
Yep.
Very cool. And had you been doing some triathlons? Did you already make that mentally think, you know what, maybe this triathlon thing would be better for me?
Yeah. So I always wanted to go to the Olympics in swimming. I tried so hard, but, you know, I just probably didn't have the genetics to be a great swimmer.
Right.
And then I found triathlon in my senior year of high school. So I was racing, I was trying to race triathlon and swim competitively. And, you know, triathlon was still kind of new then. And I was 18 years old when I started. So I already had that swim and run background. And so it was like, I just found my sport. I just had to learn the biking.
Well, and it's so funny because Gwen Jorgensen and Katie Zafar, same exact thing, right? They had a swim-run background, and they thought, but you were obviously before that. And at that point, when we looked at that Olympic format, it was so novel, right? Because you could draft on the bike, which all of us traditionalists looked at as, wait, in the Olympics, we're going to be cheating on the bike? What's going on here, right?
I know. I was not a very good cyclist when I first started. So, like, the bike was, I had to learn pretty much how to bike. But, there was hope for me.
So how did you become better on the bike? Did you have somebody help you out? Because I remember Gwen Jorgensen was talking about falling over at stoplights, couldn't clip in, and just basically had the engine, but certainly didn't have the skill set early on.
I didn't.
Your transition and becoming a cyclist, how hard was that?
Let's see. The first couple of years, I remember my first world championships, I think, were like in Edmonton in 2001. And I just got dropped from every bike pack. I mean, I just didn't quite understand the drafting part of it.
Right.
And then it didn't actually come till maybe 2004, 2005, when I started doing some crit racing. The national triathlon team had us do some bike races to get more comfortable with it. And then also we would go to like Chula Vista and ride on the crit course there.
Yep.
So just a lot of racing and experience that way got me a little more comfortable.
So was the goal Beijing 2008?
Yes.
So that's what you're focused on. And when you got to the point where, I mean, how close did you get?
The problem is, so the first day I moved to the training center, which was in like May of 2002, I got in a bike crash because I didn't know how to handle my bike and broke my hip.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so after that, I mean, I was just kind of remained injured with like overcompensation injuries, just overtraining, not knowing when to quit, when things hurt. So I stayed injured for a really long time. So I never kind of fully reached my potential. I spent, you know, a lot of time water running rather than running on the ground.
Oh, there's nothing worse.
I know.
There's nothing duller than running in the water.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, I did it because I was really, really motivated and just so excited to be at the training center. Like, that was my dream. I just couldn't get the running.
So was
the running volume in.
When did you reach a point of, well, obviously you're still trying to make the Olympic team for 2008, but the sort of the transition from, okay, I've got to move from this Olympic format to more of the non-drafting?
The non-draft, so I retired from triathlon in 2008, just because I never had a day where I wasn't in pain.
Right.
And I'm like, I just need to like heal my body. So I started bike racing. And so I bike raced and got my pro license biking. And I did that for a couple years.
Very cool. That's very similar to Sarah Crowley.
Sarah
did the same. She spent a couple years just running, a couple years just cycling. And how did the confidence you gained from being a bike racer?
It started off, you know, rough again. Like, I was getting, like, dropped in crits because it's just a whole – I mean, you can be so strong bike racing, but if you're not in the right position, you can get dropped. So I spent a lot of time like figuring out the logistics of everything. And then finally, toward my later years of the cycling, I started getting it. It was fun.
Well, and now, were you doing time trials as well?
Yes, on like borrowed bikes because I didn't have a TT bike.
So was there a point where you're like, you know what, I'm pretty good, this time trial thing? Because now the clock is ticking in terms of the Olympics, because now it's, okay, once 08 is over, it's 12.
Yeah, I kind of gave up.
Right, you know, it's like, well, I got to go for 12, and if you're doing some time trialing, you're probably thinking, you know what, maybe I should go and give this non-drafting a try.
Yeah, I ended up getting a heart surgery done in 2008. I got heat stroke in a bike race, and then they found a heart problem. So they fixed the heart, and then, you know, I'm like, what if part of the reason why I was getting injured all the time was because of my heart and I wasn't recovering properly? So I felt really good after that surgery and decided to go back to triathlon in 2010.
Was this a valve thing?
I had premature ventricular contractions.
Okay.
And it's actually quite common in a lot of cyclists.
Interesting.
Like, some people are born with it, but I could have been born with it and just the heat stroke exacerbated it.
Right.
So I don't know.
And so in terms of coming back from that, did you, afterwards, you felt better? You felt like
I felt so good.
Oh, that's amazing. You're like, why couldn't I have done this 10 years ago?
Yeah, because my heart was with triathlon. Like that, there's something about the sport that I just really, really loved. So I decided to go back, and I did this, you know, I still did more ITU racing. You know, I had a couple top 10s, but wasn't anything special.
Right.
And then I decided, you know, maybe I'll try and go long in 2013.
And so what was your first long one?
Well, I got hit by a truck.
was that like in 2014, right?
Yeah, that was 2014. So I hadn't raced a long distance one. I was planning on racing half Ironmans until I got hit.
And so where was that? And that was, that's probably way, way more. It's funny when you think about heart surgery, you'd look at that and go, oh my God, that's like the worst thing that can happen. But getting hit by a truck could be a little bit worse.
That was pretty bad. That was probably the worst of it.
Right? And so what happened?
I was living in Santa Cruz at the time, and I was just finishing up like a long training ride. And on my road bike, because I don't even think I had a TT bike yet. And a lady was not paying attention, and she turned in front of me as I was going almost 40 miles an hour.
Oh.
And so I T-boned her.
Oh my God.
And then flew up over a car, and then I was alive and airlifted to Stanford, the ICU, and I spent a week there. And yeah, I broke a lot of bones.
And they basically said you'd never race again.
Yeah, let alone like run.
Exactly. I mean, because you, broken legs, broken ribs, pretty much everything.
Yeah, the ribs were, I think, the worst. But yeah, my hand was shattered, knee, ankle. But she basically hit me kind of from the left side. So the left side of my body is a little messed up.
Oh, my God. And when did you get the feeling that, okay, maybe I can race again?
So I tried, I was out for probably 6 months of like not really doing anything. And let's see, when was it? I tried to do some non-drafting races. I got a TT bike and I was working with like an old coach and did a few non-drafting ones, but I had never been on a TT bike before. And me getting in time trial position with my hips and ribs and I just wasn't healthy. Like, it was so hard for me. So I was getting my butt kicked on the bike once again.
Oh, my God.
Because it's a whole nother, being in a time trialing is so much different than, like, the ITU, what I was used to.
Right. And so when did you have a race where you felt, you know what, I can actually be pretty good at this?
I went through like a whole big depression, like after my accident, because I was still injured and things were just not healing. And then I met my coach, my new coach, and who ended up being my boyfriend too. And he kind of took me under his wing. He had like no triathlon background whatsoever, but he was an active release therapist and
yep.
strength and conditioning coach. And so he wanted to, manage everything, like my training, my lifting, and he really thought he could help me. And so I started getting healthy working with him, which was like the first time in 16 years, really, that I was healthy, which was a miracle. Like, after that accident, I gained a lot of weight.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and just I wasn't acting like a true professional. I was drinking too much and I just wasn't in a good place until I met him. And my first 70.3 under him was, I think it was Vineman in 2016,
okay.
or no, maybe 2015, and I got last place. yeah, and a couple, like for 2 years, I was getting close to last place in every 70.3. And I basically, before I started that, I thought I was a lot better and I would do a lot better than I actually was. So that was a tough pill to swallow. Because I thought I would just immediately be good at the bike.
Sure.
Since
you were racing bikes. But at the other side of that is did all of this going through from heart surgery to, getting destroyed on the bike, did it change the way you did these? Did it change the way you looked at these races? Because now it's sort of an affirmation. Hey, I'm alive. I'm healthy. Last place, yeah, but so what? I'm still racing as a professional. And I couldn't walk a month ago.
Yeah, and I think, so my mindset eventually switched, because who wants to get last place,
right.
In these races? And, it took like, I think, 4 last places before my coach was like, look, you got to either get a real job and
yep.
do triathlon as a hobby, or you need to commit 100% with the training, like eating, nutrition, recovery, and actually act like a professional. And it took me like a week to like decide, you know, do I really want to do this? I've been doing this for so long, like 16 years of being a, you know, professional,
right?
But not like hardly making any money. And so I decided, you know, I was going to go all in and commit. And literally when I made that switch is when things started to change for me. I started, you know, making a little bit of money in those 70.3s. And then the end of 2016 was my first podium in a 70.3.
Wow. That, what was that feeling like?
Oh, it was amazing. Cause I'm like, oh, finally all this work, you know, it wasn't just a couple months or, you know, a couple years of work. It literally was 16 years before, you know, something great happened.
What do you look at as the lowest point during that 16 years of hell?
Well, you know, a lot of people only know like the story from like 2014 on,
right.
But like,
yeah,
you know, I started in 2001 and, you know, I was just plagued with injury. You know, I went through eating disorders. I went through coaching abuse. I mean, it's just the list goes on of what I've come back from.
When you talk coaching abuse, do you mean coaches who were just pushing you to do things you shouldn't have been doing?
No. So, you know, it was one coach in particular mm-hmm. who, you know, at first, you know, took me under his wing and was great. And then I ended up getting a boyfriend, and then his demeanor towards me switched. Like, he would call me really bad names.
What?
It was really bad.
Oh my God. That is.
Yeah.
It's funny because I just had a woman on named Melina Glusak who, you know, was a top runner in the U.S. out of high school, running 25, 30 miles a week, and ended up at Oregon running like 80 miles a week and multiple stress fractures. And I mean, so much as a young athlete, you are so tied into that coach.
Yep.
And if you know, it's such a crapshoot that you get the right one who really believes in you and knows what the hell they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're young and like,
totally.
And it's almost kind of like the Mary Kane story, you know, like
absolutely.
You don't think you're going to be good unless you stay with this coach.
Right.
And I just, you know, for 2 years, he, you know, it was sexually abusive. It was, you know, very emotionally abusive. And I mean, I lost a lot of confidence in that time. And that's like the real reason why I moved away from Colorado Springs. I moved to Park City, Utah, just to get away from him. And then finally, you know, right when I moved to Utah, he got fired for doing the same thing to another athlete.
Wow. That is because you think about it from a coach's perspective. How does a coach make reputation? By somebody performing.
Yep.
And if it's high school level or college level, if they find somebody they think has talent, a lot of times they're going to pile too much on them because they're trying to get another job.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? They're looking to get another job. So are they always looking at the best interest of the athletes? Meb Keflezighi's coach Bob Larson, told me something that always stayed with me. I said, how do you know when you've been a good coach? He goes, if my athlete is still running 10 years after I work with them, then I was successful.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's very few who are thinking that way.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Coaches can make or break you.
Totally.
And unfortunately, it goes on way more than we probably know.
No question. No question. And it's good that you're talking out about it because it is important for that next athlete not to go through what you went through.
Yeah. It was bad. I mean, I almost quit the sport then because of him.
Well, and more, I mean, the sport is one thing, but just your own self-worth, how you feel about yourself, being comfortable in your skin. Your coach is a partner. And a lot of times a coach will see something in you before you see something in you.
Yes.
And to have somebody who's that important to you and so connected to you be a negative
destroy you.
Well, it's like growing up in a bad home. It's very, very similar because you spend more time with that person than anybody else.
Yep. You put your full trust in someone and then that happens. And I lost, you know, I still have, to this day, I still have little issues with trust.
sure.
and coaching, even though that I know, you know, my coach, who's my boyfriend, you know, like he 100%, you know, wants me to do good or do well. But it's just in the back of my mind, I have that, like, is he trying to sabotage me? And that just stems from this old coach.
Yeah. So now, I mean, when I look at just in 2019, you won Cartagena, you won Shanghai. It seems like this 2019 might be the best year you've ever had.
Yeah, it's been a really good 2 years. Like, I've had my first win in 2017.
Yep.
And that I just never really thought I never thought that would happen. Like, to be going from, like, last place in the 70.3s to actually, like, winning and getting on the podium, like, is just surreal.
What was what was that first win?
My first one was Victoria.
Yeah.
70.3. And my coach couldn't be there, but my parents took the ferry from Seattle. That's
yeah.
where I grew up.
Yeah.
And they were able to watch it. And I wasn't a favorite to podium or win. But it was the bike that won the race for me.
The bike, which was the thing that you had to learn.
Yeah. Yep. And so, I mean, just to have them be there and watch my race. And I mean, I just thought about, you know, the last 17 years of just struggle.
Right. Yeah. And as you run now, was it one of those things where you had somebody with you towards the end, or could you savor it?
In the race?
Yeah, in the race, when you're sort of wanting to flash back on the 17 years, mom and dad are going to be at the finish.
I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, right? And you're
like,
running along.
I'm like, during the run, I'm like, oh, I'm probably going to get run down.
Right.
You know, like, oh, when are they coming? I know they're coming. But, I mean, I won by maybe like a minute and a half or so, but.
That doesn't seem like anything when you're running along, yeah.
It's just, yeah, so crazy to cross, I still, to this day, get, like, chills and emotional thinking about it.
So it's funny how, you said, you had 17 years of struggle, and then you win a race. And then I'm sure at that point you start hearing from people you haven't heard from in years, sort of like, we were with you the whole time.
Yeah.
We knew you were going to get – we always knew that you were going to be doing this. And you're like, where were you when
– A lot of people thought I should have quit a long time ago.
Right.
Like, why is she still doing this? You know, like, get a real job. Like, not everyone obviously
right.
was like that. Like, I have my close,
of course,
you know, group and my support system, but it was really cool. Like, people were like, finally, yes, you know, like, and that's what I paid attention to more.
So are you still dealing with ramifications of the bike crash from 14?
Like from
physical,
like now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably always will have like back issues and rib issues and hand issues. But, you know, I have a good team of doctors and, you know, physical therapists that help me.
Right.
So we manage it. And, you know, injury is a part of the sport. You're
going to
get injured.
It is.
And it's just learning, you know, when to pull back the reins a little bit. And like, I make sure I take at least one day of recovery a week of like not doing anything.
Good
and
move.
That's helped a bunch.
So what have you learned about yourself through all of this? You've 17 years of hell.
You know, I'm freaking tough. I've learned that your body can do amazing things and you can do amazing things. And I'm pretty strong mentally, I think. And that's, most people would have quit a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, you were obviously very strong mentally to go through that, because a lot of people would have been, something's telling me it's time to get a real job. Something's telling me.
I love the sport. I'm like, I think I ask myself a lot. I'm like, what is it about triathlon that kept me going? And it goes back to when I was a little girl, like just swimming. I love to be fit. I love pushing myself. And, you know, I didn't want to be done with the sport just because I was injured.
Right. Well, you sort of want to go out on your own terms. You want
to
go out going, okay, this is the way it should be. I've paid my dues. I went as far as I could. And now I see that now's the time. You want to do it on your own. You want to make the call. You don't want your body telling you when that call comes.
Yeah. And I, you know, those 17 years prior, like I never could get a block of running in. I was showing up to races with no run training. like on land. And so, you know, the last 4 years I've actually put in run, my injuries have been, you know, very little to none. And I've actually been able to run now.
That is so,
so
cool.
I don't even think I'm close to my potential yet.
So what was your first Ironman?
So my very first Ironman was 2018 Port Mac in Australia.
Yeah.
Macquarie.
And what was that experience like?
Oh, that was an experience, all right. Oh, I didn't really train for it. You know, I was just still training for 70.3s, but I'm like, oh, I'll just try it.
I'll fake it.
Yep, and so I flew. I mean, the swim was fine, and then the bike, oh, man.
It's a long way.
I cracked, like, halfway through and just rode the second half, like, out of aero, and just, I didn't feel properly. But then, I'd never run a marathon before. Or even close to a marathon, but actually ran myself into third.
So you had a crappy day and got third.
Yeah, and turned it like, you know, I channeled the never giving up, you know, and
right.
just picked a few people off running. And like, you know, it was like, it wasn't till later in the marathon that actually happened. So I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun. Even though I said I would never do an Ironman after I finished. I was like, never again.
I don't think you're the only person to say that.
Yeah.
And then the next day you're already planning out, okay, what could I have done differently?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think I raced one Ironman. I think I raced Cozumel after that, but had a labrum tear in my hip. So that didn't go very well. But I ended up racing like 5 Ironmans last year.
What?
Yes, just before Kona.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Let's see. I've been hit by a truck. I had a heart issue. I think I'll do 5 Ironmans. That's a good
idea. I tried to qualify for Kona.
That's a way you got to do it, right?
Yeah, it took 5 tries.
So what was the Kona experience like?
Oh, man. Well, I wanted to see what Kona was all about. You know, you hear about the hype and everything, and when I got there maybe like a week before, and mm-hmm. it was like mind-blowing.
Yep.
I mean, I just felt like a kid in the candy store.
Right.
And I'm like, I actually like the hype. I think it's cool, and like, this is awesome. And unfortunately, like, I mean, I had a really good swim, and I had some mechanicals on the bike, and so I was unable to finish, which was devastating.
I'm sure.
Devastating, but, like, not to be able to finish.
It does. And the fact that growing up, it was all about the Olympics. You want to go to the Olympics.
Yep.
You want to be on the stage. You want to be on that big stage with the big spotlight. So when you get off the plane in Kona, here's the stage. Here's the spotlight.
Yep.
I didn't get to do it for the Olympics, but this is what I want. This is why you do it. I remember one time I was talking to Craig Alexander. I'm like, is it? Sort of a pain. You've got all these interview requests. You're defending Ironman champion. He goes, you know, that's why we do this.
Yeah.
I want people to be demanding my time.
And
people wanting to, I plan that in because I want that. That's why, that's
it
my payback
good.
For my sponsors and payback for all the hard work I've done. So,
yeah.
And I'm sure you're the same way.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was amazing. It makes me even hungrier to go back.
Right.
So it's just, not fun to go there and not finish, but that's how my last 2 wins came right after Kona. Cause I flew straight from Kona to China.
Yep.
And valid, like I like raced with like anger,
of course,
you know, and it worked.
So are you qualified for 2020 or you still have to go through that process?
No, I still have to go through that process. So my first race is March 7th, Ironman New Zealand.
Oh, there you go. So hopefully you win that one and boom, you're in Kona.
Maybe we qualify early this time.
Exactly. You've already tried the 5-in-1 year thing.
I know, that's hard.
Yeah, you think? Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe 5-in-1 year. That is knucklehead material, by the way.
I know, I'm crazy.
Yeah, you are crazy. But
I am healthy, so why not?
Well, and that's the thing is you're going into this whole attitude of, listen, I was laying on a pavement after getting hit by a truck, everything here is gravy. I get to race. And I think what you proved to yourself when you ran your way into third at Port Macquarie was it's a long day and stuff happens. And just sort of like in my life, and you get through it and good stuff can happen at the end.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing with Ironman. It's like, it's such a long day and really anything can happen. Like that's how I qualified for Kona. I mean, I was I didn't have a great bike in Kona, and I literally ran into third in the last 5 miles, and that was my Kona spot.
Yeah, for Port Macquarie?
No, Whistler. That's
oh, Whistler. Oh, my God. So you like the tough courses.
Yeah. I mean, I needed hilly.
Right. Hilly is good. There you go.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just had an average day mostly, but, you know, I didn't feel good running like the marathon. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a long day. But then I'm like, okay, wait a second. This is what I train for, and anything can happen. And so I just, like, turned myself inside out that last half marathon.
I love it. Yeah, and so are you planning, depending on what happens in New Zealand, are you going to St. George?
No, I'm probably not going to do St. George because that's at altitude, and body just doesn't love altitude very much.
I'm the same way.
But I am going to go back to Port Mac. I've done, this will be my third year doing that.
Good for you.
Hey, Kelsey, I love that race.
Kelsey, best of luck with your season. Thank you for taking so much time. You have gone through... You've gone through hell. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I like
what you've
sharing
gone
my story, though. Hopefully,
well,
it
it's important. It's important, and it's important for people to do more research on coaches. And we're in an era where you can go online and see what somebody's reputation is before you make that decision to end up with a coach who is not best for you.
Yeah, it can happen.
Yoel is your perfect living, breathing example.
God. So funny story. So. Do you guys still do the endurance awards?
We have not done that since sold. Let's see, 2013, I think, was the last one.
Oh my gosh! So I got like junior duathlete of the year. Like,
oh, was that
2002?
Is it SeaWorld?
You gave me my award
at SeaWorld, right?
Wasn't it SeaWorld? It was in La Jolla or somewhere in San Diego.
Oh, you know what? It was at the La Jolla Museum of Contemporary Arts because SeaWorld was under construction. That's right.
Yeah. So yeah, that was. Long time ago, but that's
wow. Good for you. That is awesome. Kelsey, thank you so much for taking so much time and chatting. It was really an honor to get to chat with you over the phone.
Yeah, thank you so much for putting me on the show.
Love it. Kelsey Withrow has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by UCAN, smarter energy to finish stronger. VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. EnduranceCon coming up June 27th, 28th by our Challenged Athletes Foundation this last year. 3,260 grants sent out, $4.8 million to challenged athletes all over the planet. Check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Babbittville.com, and all of your favorite podcast apps. As always, endurance lives here.